finally begin here with the last panel, reinventing the interface. So I'm going to blame a little bit of what I'm about to do here on Warren for bringing up the term ethnomethodology and jogging my memory and getting me thinking about some stuff, and a little bit on Bill when he started to talk about the author and some of the issues around authorship. And I was reflecting a little bit on the title, Reinventing the Interface, and kind of thinking about that, and it struck me that it really is a kind of, you know, has a, certainly a double meaning in the way that, you know, sort of Operation Enduring Freedom does. I mean, to invent, right, is to kind of produce something for the first time through the use of imagination or some kind of ingenious thinking, and to experiment. And the sort of ambiguity that I started seeing in this term reinvention is, on the one hand, you can reinvent as a kind of recapitulation of something already done, where it has a sort of negative connotation in the sense of a sort of remaking, you know, kind of reinventing the wheel sort of thing. But also, on the other hand, reinvention as a kind of creative act of producing something different, unexpected or unorthodox. And of course, I'm more interested in the latter, though perhaps at some level the two are inseparable. When I started studying cultural anthropology, I was frustrated because I wanted to look at, you know, my cultural practices as somehow foreign or other, and there just wasn't really the space and the discipline to allow for that. So I kind of migrated over into sociology for a while. And what I reacted to or responded to most strongly within sociology had to do with things like symbolic interactionism, dramaturgy, ethnomethodology. Which is, for those who might not know that term, kind of in a kind of vulgar sense, the study of the ways people make sense of their social world. And Harold Garfinkel, as Warren mentioned, in the early 60s was really one of the founders of this movement. And the reason I responded to that is because I thought it was so good at illustrating the kind of embeddedness and constructedness of what we often presume to be kind of stable and naturalized social systems. And one of the things that I loved about Garfinkel's work was the whole idea of, you know, the breaching experiment as something that would really kind of intentionally mess with people's frames of reference and try and get them to see something from a different point of view. And oftentimes it was a relatively simple gesture that was used to really illuminate the kind of fragility or the tenuousness of the social world and how we orient to it as meaningful in order to try and do a sense-making out of it. And, you know, in the history of art, you can look at a lot of things where that happens too, and those are the things that I respond to most strongly in terms of my own understanding of art history and art practice, where, you know, it really functions in a similar vein, where it's a kind of relatively simple conceptual gesture that shifts the frame of reference, like, you know, Duchamp's urinal or something, where, you know, you kind of throw a wrench into the works, you kind of cast it in a new light. You demonstrate the constructedness of a certain system, of a certain kind of institutional framework within which we're operating. You kind of denaturalize it. And oftentimes along with that is a bit of discomfort. You know, it's really sort of an uncomfortable thing when you do that well. But I think you really see that discomfort as productive or constructive, reconstructive. You know, that by playing with those rules and the logic and the grammar of context as a kind of mechanism for generating new forms, you know, it can be quite powerful. So in this spirit, I started thinking a little bit about, you know, what we've been doing here over the last few days. And in many ways, you know, as amazing and wonderful as it's been, there's all kinds of constraints that I've been kind of feeling operating on the way we're doing what we're doing. And I kind of tried to think in ethnomethodological terms about, well, what are some of the social practices that we're reproducing here in this institutional context, and you know, what is my role here as a kind of moderator, your role out there as an audience, the role of the presenters up here / authors on the panel as they're presenting their work. You know, when the author speaks, what's the assumed relationship between the production of a set of ideas or the dissemination and sharing of those ideas and their reception or consumption by you out there in this audience, and how might we kind of playfully throw a wrench in these works and attempt to kind of transgress some of these practices in the interest of seeing what sort of strange new forms might come of it. and what might be at stake in that transgression. So I thought it would be kind of fun to engage in a little ethnomethodological breaching experiment where we attempt to kind of render visible, as we've talked about in a lot of different ways over the last few days, to a degree, the relative transparency of the kind of classic academic mode of information management and exchange that we've been doing, and to allow our esteemed colleagues on this panel to observe and entertain themselves from a slightly different point of view. So what I'm going to propose here is really quite simple, though I'm prepared to get quite a lot of resistance to it. But I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway. And I thought it would be fascinating, for example, to hear Alan present Kate's work, for Kate to present Alan's work, for Lev to present Peter's work, and for Peter to present Lev's work. And I can tell by the look I'm getting from Peter that he is extremely upset about this. But that's a good thing. But I'll defer. I'm just, you know.
I've also got a question about that, and it's pre-coding information, in other words, and here I'll be mouthing Kate's notions of that, and that is that implies that these talks are, in fact, the equivalent of written text. When I feel, rightly, wrongly, and it's up to everyone in the room to judge, that there's a performative aspect, and that what I'm saying isn't the entirety
Well, I agree with that completely, and so what I was thinking is, even if these things aren't written out, even if there is a kind of improvisation that goes on, it's actually much more performative in a certain sense than it would have been otherwise.
It's performative for you. It's absolutely performative for you. The question of agency then becomes something that's very much at issue.
No, I'm trying not to, and I actually don't think it's as performative for me. But that's when you're trying to extract a specific kind of knowledge out of these presentations. There might be a whole lot of other information that would emerge very quickly.
The way performance works, I would bet you anything that each paper would take 3 times longer to perform by the other performer.
Right, but I'm just saying from an ethnomethodological standpoint, we wouldn't necessarily be looking at the content that we're extracting from these papers in a traditional sense. We'd be looking at the kind of framework within which all of this stuff's taking place and attempting to analyze that.
Well, okay.
Well, I think that's a great place to begin. So, Alan?